This Is Your Life, episode 94. Hello and welcome to this episode of This Is Your Life. My name is Michael Hyatt and this is the podcast dedicated to intentional leadership. My goal is to help you live with more passion, work with greater focus, and lead with extraordinary influence. In this episode, I'll be talking about 15 amazing lessons I learned from bad bosses. These are somewhat random, but they're all important and frankly, I didn't really enjoy the process of learning them, but I wouldn't trade the knowledge I gained for anything. Well, you can find the outline, the resource links, and a complete transcript of the show notes at michaelhyatt.com/94, as in episode 94. I'll be back in a minute with some thoughts on this topic.
If you have something to say or sell in today's noisy world,
now you can get the inspiration, training, and tools you need to increase your influence and impact.
Platform University, a community of like-minded individuals led by one of Forbes magazine's top 50 social media influencers, Michael Hyatt.
Each month, you'll get access to
The Masterclass, where Michael interviews leading platform authorities.
Backstage Pass, a behind-the-scenes look at Michael's own platform business.
Member Makeover, with specific recommendations you can put to work now.
A live Q&A session where you can ask Michael your most burning questions.
And the discussion forum where our members support one another in their common quest.
Hi, Michael. It's Linda Henigsberg. My website is changeyouremotions.com. And the thing that I love the most is the generous community in the forum. When I get stuck on something with my online business, I know where to go. I love everything about Platform U, but that's my favorite. Thanks.
Intrigued? Now it is the time to invest in building your own platform.
Well, believe it or not, I've had more than 20 bosses in my career. I worked well with nearly all of them, but surprisingly, I learned the most from the worst ones. And the truth is that most of my supervisors were average, and sadly, I can't really remember much about them. One was exceptional. He became a role model, and he took responsibility when things went badly. He gave others credit when things went well, and he just exuded integrity and became a very close personal friend. One boss was just plain incompetent. I don't know how to say it any other way. He was a nice guy, but he was pretty much burned up and checked out. He couldn't seem to do anything right. And I think he retired mentally 2 years before the company let his body go, if you know what I mean. I was embarrassed to tell anybody I worked for him because he had such a bad reputation both inside the company and out. Two others I worked for were downright sinister, if not evil. They were the bad bosses. They could be kind and charming 1 minute, and then an hour later, mean, paranoid, and vindictive. And though I tried hard to stay out of the line of fire, they both skewered me on a few occasions. And I really hated working for them at the time, but honestly, as I said at the top of the show, I wouldn't trade what I learned from them for anything. Reality is that you don't usually get to choose your boss. Sure, you can quit, but most bosses aren't so bad that you would actually leave the company over them. They're more like a low-grade headache. You learn to live with them. And besides, if you quit, you'll miss some important lessons, crucial lessons, that'll help you become a better leader. So here are 15 semi-random lessons I learned the hard way from bad bosses, and I want you to have the opportunity to learn from my experience as well. Lesson one, bosses create an emotional climate with their attitudes and behaviors. And I know for much of my career, I was unaware of this, but I ultimately worked for a man who was very emotional, very up and down. Some days he was, you know, all sunshine and cherries and positive thoughts. And the next day he was, you know, Donnie Downer. Everything was negative. He was angry, you know, just everything in between. I don't know if he was bipolar, but it sure seemed that way. We would typically go to his office and ask his assistant, we would say, how's the weather? And that was kind of code for what kind of mood is he in? Is he in a bad mood? Is he in a good mood? But we really kind of framed everything that we would say to him based on our perception of what the weather was going to be that day. And you don't want to be in that situation. You don't want people, you know, holding stuff back from you that you need as a leader or as a manager, or just kind of trying to accommodate your emotional patterns. It's not a good thing. Because, for example, when I thought he was in a bad mood, I would withhold information from him. I wouldn't lay it all out there because the fear of reprisal was too great. So I would be very calculated in what I would share with him. And again, you know, every leader has that emotional climate that they create. And the best thing that you and I can do is be aware of it so that we don't have people managing the information that they bring to us. Second lesson, the higher up you are, the more people read into everything you say and do. Stuff gets amplified as it moves downstream. I used to have an executive vice president that worked for me by the name of Tammy Heim, and Tammy called it the flick of the wrist syndrome, where you know, you flick the wrist as a leader, and downstream, people interpret all kinds of things related to that when probably you didn't mean anything. But in the absence of a narrative, they make stuff up. I remember sitting in an executive review meeting one time, business review, which we did every month when I was at Thomas Nelson. Executives would come through, those with P&L responsibility, and report on their operating results for the previous month. And I remember after listening to several executives present, I was taking notes, I was trying to ask thoughtful questions, I was engaging, but a consultant pulled me aside at the break and said, "Are you angry?" And I said, "No. What do you mean?" And she said, "Well, your face looks very angry. You've got this scowl that I promise you is intimidating. People are nervous. They're withholding information from you that you need to know. You've got to be more welcoming and more open than you're being." I had no idea. I was completely clueless. Well, I changed, you can bet. And with her help and with the help of some other close confidants, I really tried to change that behavior so that people weren't managing the information that I was getting. So that's lesson three. Just be aware that the higher you are up, the more people are going to read into every action, and therefore you've got to be careful, or at the very least, provide the interpretation so people aren't left guessing. Lesson three, a word of encouragement can literally make someone's week. And conversely, a harsh word can ruin it. When I was in college, I worked for a small business where the owner was very volatile. And I remember one time he said something to me that not only embarrassed me, it ruined my week. It was probably a throwaway line that he didn't even think about, but it was humiliating to me, and it really ruined my week. And I realized that I've probably done that to other people and been unaware of it. But conversely, I've had the experience where people have said an encouraging word. Even now I get it on my podcast comments or my blog comments, and I can go for a long time with a word of encouragement. Probably the people that work for you and work with you are the same way. They need affirmation. I've really been learning this with my new dog, Charlie. The trainer told me, you know, rather than scolding him when he does something wrong, make sure that he knows when he does something right. It's much easier to train a dog if you base your training on affirmation. Well, so it is with parenting. So it is with leading any organization. I mean, it's not just dogs, it's people. We all respond to affirmation. And when people tell us that we're doing the right thing, when we're headed in the right direction, it just strengthens us and inspires us. So that's lesson number three. Lesson number four, hire the right people, then trust them to do their job. This was probably the middle of my career. I began working for a man who was a micromanager. I didn't know that at the outset, but almost immediately, he would ask me for a daily report. Now, I'm not just talking about, you know, sort of a pleasant, hey, how'd your day go? But I'm talking about he wanted detail. What did I spend my day doing blow by blow? And it communicated that he didn't trust me. It communicated that I was incompetent. And frankly, it kept me from doing the job that I'd been hired to do because I was spending so much time documenting what I was doing and reporting to him what I was doing. And I just felt overmanaged. And I only lasted about 6 months in that job before I left it. My wife, Gail, has now got a personal assistant, and she was asking me for some advice on how she should delegate. And I said to her, I said, don't be a micromanager. Delegate the outcome and leave it up to this person who is very competent and whom you trust. Leave it up to them to figure out how to get it done. You don't need to manage that part of it. Just manage the outcome or articulate the outcome. So that's lesson number four. Lesson number five, don't ever intentionally embarrass people in front of their boss, their peers, or their direct reports. Again, early in my career, I was in a executive meeting, one of the very first high-level executive meetings that I'd ever been in, so I didn't really know the rules. The leader of the organization walked in, and for some reason, something one of the accountants said set him off, and he proceeded to embarrass this accountant for a very minor mistake. You know, really made a object lesson for all of us, so much so that the accountant began crying and in embarrassment gathered up all of his materials. This was a man, gathered up all of his materials and left the room completely humiliated. Don't do that to people. It's so disrespectful. It's so amazingly humiliating. And it not only negatively impacts the person that you embarrass, but it really impacts everyone else. If you want to basically mobilize everybody against you, that's the way to do it. But be very careful. Be forgiving. Be gracious. Don't take advantage of situations where it would be a cheap shot, an easy shot, and embarrass people in front of their peers. People are very sensitive to that. I know I am. Lesson number six, get both sides of the story before you take action. I had a boss who fired somebody under me when I was out of town at a convention, and he only heard part of the story. He didn't ask for my opinion. He was going on off some information he got from someone who wasn't even in our division, and it turns out that the information was errant, but he fired this person. Well, the person that got fired came to me and said, I don't know what to do. This is incorrect information. And he told me the story of what happened. And when I heard it, I realized that my boss was only acting with part of the story. So I got him on the phone. I explained what had happened. He was mortified. He said, please restate this person. I'll apologize to him personally. But, you know, I was acting with half the information. And you know, I've done it myself. I've been in situations where someone has come to me with their side of the story. I assumed naively that it was the whole story, and it wasn't. At best, whoever's telling you the story is giving you their perspective. And there are a lot of perspectives on any incident. And it really behooves you and I as leaders to get as many perspectives as we can so that we have as much objectivity as we can so that we can make decisions that are rooted in reality and not somebody's opinion. So get both sides of the story before you take action. Lesson number seven. Tell the truth, then you don't have to remember what you said. I had somebody on a board who basically lied to the chairman of the board and lied to me. Two different stories, but we compared notes, the chairman and myself. And we realized that the person who had told us this was lying. And when we confronted them, they still denied it. I mean, it was unbelievable the way they tried to get out of it. And we ended up having to remove that board member. But, you know, if you tell the truth, then you don't have to worry about that. You don't have to worry about the message being congruent with various people. Just tell the truth and then let the chips fall where they may. So that's lesson number seven. Lesson number eight, don't get stuck in the paralysis of analysis. Pull the trigger. I had a boss who it seems like every time he was confronted with a big decision, he would send us on these errands to go get more information. And no matter how much information we provided, he wanted still more information until sometimes the opportunity passed because he was stuck in analysis and we just missed the opportunity to make the decision we needed to make. Other times, you know, we just got discouraged with it and gave up on it. And I don't know what the issue was, but don't be one of those kind of people because it basically bottlenecks your organization. It will cost you opportunity and it just makes you look like a really, really bad leader. So don't get stuck in the paralysis of analysis. Yes, do analysis, be thoughtful, get what you need, but pull the trigger. And sometimes that takes courage, but the moment of absolute certainty will never come. I don't care how much of analysis you get, in business as in life, oftentimes you have to make decisions based on the information you have, not all the information you could have. Lesson number 9, don't do anything you wouldn't want published on the front page of the paper. I actually had a boss give me this advice, and it was very good advice, but he learned it the hard way because he made a decision that really hurt him when he got some negative publicity about it. And it was something he regretted. And frankly, I can't go into it because it would reveal who it is. But he got some negative publicity, and it was on the front page of our local paper. And he deeply regretted it. And that was the advice that he gave me, is just to evaluate every decision as though the newspaper was going to get a hold of the decision and it was going to be on the front page. Great, great advice. Lesson number 10. Don't ever ask your people to do something you are unwilling to do yourself. I had a sales director when I was in college working a summer job, and we were doing door-to-door sales, actually selling for an encyclopedia company. And so one Saturday morning, we got this long training seminar, and he actually was very masterful, very brilliant at doing the seminar, and he trained us. And then we were going to go out that afternoon and actually put into practice what we had learned that morning. Except that when he dropped us off to make these sales calls, he didn't come with us. And I just asked him about it. I said, oh, I assumed you were coming with us. He admitted, and this was frankly kind of stupid that he admitted this, but he admitted that he had never actually done what he had trained us to do. Well, boy, our respect for him plummeted. And in fact, our confidence in the information we got really plummeted. And it made for a very long afternoon. Fortunately, we all figured it out, but not because of what he had shared with us, but because of kind of trial and error on our own. So don't ask people to do what you're unwilling to do yourself. Be the kind of leader like Lieutenant Colonel Hal Moore, who was depicted in the movie We Were Soldiers, who was the first to have his boots hit the battlefield and the last for his boots to come off the battlefield, because he was a leader who took the initiative and actually led. Lesson number 11, respect other people's time, especially those under you. Now, it's easy to manage up and to give respect to those above us, but it really takes a real leader to give respect to those people under you and not waste their time and cause them lost motion by doing so. I had a boss who, every time I would go meet with him, he would let me drive from one building to another. We were in two different buildings. And I would get there, and about half the time I would say he would cancel the meeting at the last minute. He could have called me 15 minutes before I left and tell me, look, I got something that's come up. I can't make the meeting today. But no, he let me get in my car, drive several miles to his office, and then his assistant would inform me that the meeting was canceled. Probably about 25% of the time for the meetings that we did have, the meeting would be late. In other words, we wouldn't start on time. He would leave me in his waiting room while he did, I don't know what. He was on phone calls, all kinds of stuff. But the big message I took away from that was he just doesn't respect me. He doesn't honor my time. You know, I'm trying to work for him. I'm trying to move the needle, move the ball down the field. But I couldn't do it because I was tied up waiting for him or in lost motion going back to my office after he'd canceled a meeting. So convey respect. You're not going to get respect unless you give respect. And as leaders, we have to go first. Lesson 12, follow through on your commitments, even when it's inconvenient or expensive. This, I think, is the real test of integrity. And I don't have a negative example of this, but I've got a positive example of this. Because when I had been on the job, one of my first jobs out of college, my boss had promised to me that after 90 days, a salary review, and that if I was doing a good job, I would get an increase in salary. Well, unfortunately, what he didn't know at the time was that we were going through a recession. This was back in the 80s. We were going through a recession at that point. The company had instituted a hiring freeze and a salary freeze, so he actually couldn't give the raise. But he told me after 90 days, he said, you've done an amazing job. I was fully intending to give you this raise, but the company won't let me. But he said, because I personally gave you my word, I'm going to honor my word, and I'm going to give you the raise out of my own pocket. And he did. I was so moved by that, it really impacted my view of leadership forever and my view of integrity, because integrity is essentially making your actions line up with your word. You say you're going to do something, you do it. Honesty, on the other hand, and I think I got this from Dr. Covey early on, but honesty is making your words line up with action. your actions. So they're two sides of the same coin, but they're critically important. And in your organization, if you're going to have people's hearts, if they're going to really trust you and not become cynical, you've got to fulfill the commitments that you make no matter what, even if it's more expensive than you originally thought, even if it's inconvenient and you didn't really plan on having to do what you're now going to be asked to do or what you're going to do to fulfill your word. But following through on your commitments is critically important for organizational integrity and for your integrity as a leader. Lesson 13, don't be ambitious to get promoted. Instead, focus on serving and doing a great job, and then the promotions will come to you. I had somebody work for me once that's about all they thought about. It seemed like they were always scheming about how they could get more responsibility, always wondered when their next promotion was. And honestly, if they had spent that same time and energy working on their job, the promotions would have come faster. But I almost looked for a reason not to promote them because I didn't want to reward that kind of behavior. So there's nothing wrong with ambition. But when you become too ambitious in an unhealthy way, it'll really backfire on you. So don't be ambitious to get promoted. If you're any good, it'll eventually happen. Lesson 14, be responsive to everyone at every level. You never know who may be your next boss. So the guy I was telling you about earlier that didn't respect my time, as it turns out, I got promoted over him so that he was eventually working for me. Now, I tried to give him the benefit of the doubt. I tried to train him. I patiently explained why responsiveness was important and why respect was important, but he just couldn't get it. He couldn't change, and I ultimately let him go. So you got to be responsive to everyone at every level because you never know who may be your next boss. It may be that person that you disrespect that's two levels under you, or a person that doesn't work in your division or in your organization. You know, be kind to everyone, really for your own well-being. And then lesson 15, do not complain about your boss to anyone who is not part of the solution. If you can't keep from complaining, then have the integrity to quit. I had another boss who was always complaining about his boss. You would think by listening to my boss that his boss was an idiot. You know, he couldn't do anything right. Everything he did was wrong. Well, eventually that person left. And by the way, this created an entire culture of complaining. And when that person left, I went to work for his boss and I found out that he wasn't an idiot, that he was pretty darn smart, that he made really good decisions. But he created this entire culture and essentially gave people permission to complain about him because he was leading by example. And oh, by the way, we're always leading by example. You're going to replicate your behavior, good or bad, whether you like it or not. So you need to be thoughtful about what you do. When you complain about that person, you're giving permission to your teammates to complain about you and to talk about you in the same kind of way. So the bottom line is this: you can learn from anyone. If you don't work for a great leader, don't despair. It's okay. Some of the lessons that impact you the most will come from the leaders who impressed you the least. And assume this, and I love this, you have exactly the leader you need right now to go to the next level. Something that you're learning, you're going to need. You're going to need it to go to the next level. So whether good or bad, if you're a real leader, if you're a real learner, and by the way, those things go hand in hand together, you can learn from the experience and you can grow in your leadership. So question for you, what lessons have you learned from a bad boss, a bad client, or a bad partner? Leave your answer at michaelhyatt.com/94, as in episode 94. And let's turn now to our listener Q&A segment. Our first question comes from Elizabeth.
Hi, Michael. This is Elizabeth Young, and I blog about the art of living inspired at jelizabethyoung.com. And I'm just driving back from meeting you at the SCORE conference, which was an awesome conference. And I thank you for everything you do. It's amazing how that conference is going to take my writing to the next level. But my question to you is, a while back, you had suggested that I blog under my domain, my name domain. And ElizabethYoung.com was taken. So I have ElizabethYoung.me, and then I currently blog at jelizabethyoung.com. J is the first initial in my first name, which is Jennifer. But I never use Jennifer, and I always introduce myself as Elizabeth Young. And I'm finding that it may be confusing for people, and I want to know if this is just me and in my head, or is it a reality that it is confusing, and should I maybe switch to ElizabethYoung.me? I also have ElizabethYoungOnline.com, so I'm just wondering your take on it. I really value your opinion, and I appreciate all you do. So thanks, Michael.
Elizabeth, this is a pretty common problem because the truth is if you don't have a domain that was registered, you know, back in the early part of this century or even in the late 90s, you're probably out of luck. Most likely, unless you have a really unusual name, your name is probably already taken, at least the .com version. Fortunately, I got mine at michaelhyatt.com back in the late 90s and it wasn't taken. Now, even in the Nashville area where I live, last I counted, there were like 23 Michael Hyatts here. So, you know, it's not that easy to get it. But what I would encourage you to do, I don't think I would use the J Elizabeth Young, because if you don't use that anywhere, it's going to be unfamiliar. What I would do is use ElizabethYoung.me, and I would go out and probably get both just in case you want to change your mind later. But John Acuff does this on his blog. I don't know if you know him as a very popular blogger, but Acuff.me, his name was tied up and that's the one he got. So that can work fine. You know, you just have to make a point to emphasize the .me part of that. But people are going to remember your name. And ultimately, if they bookmark your site or subscribe to it, the name of it's not going to matter. So that's what I would suggest. The next question comes from Joy.
Hello, Michael. My name is Joy McMillan. You can find me at simplybloom.org. I'm a graphic designer and a public speaker. And thanks to the wisdom, encouragement, and resources that you've consistently provided, and also, my book, which is about marriage and intimacy, will be releasing next month in June. I stumbled upon your website last year while developing my business and am so incredibly thankful for the way you pour yourself out into others. My question for you would be how to navigate or find a balance, rather, in aggressively broadcasting oneself, whether it's a business, brand, or book, and taking a more passive approach because of the spiritual nature of my business. It's been easy for me to coast over the past few years, declaring, well, God will open the doors, and he's made so many great connections for me and blessed my business, but now I'm realizing it's time for me to step out and be brave and bold. So I guess I'm asking, at what point does one cross the line from being bold and brave to that self-promotion and the vanity? And it just seems like it's a tricky subject, a tricky place to navigate when one's business does have an overtly spiritual flavor to it. So that's my question. Thank you. Blessings to you, Michael.
Joy, this is a tough one, isn't it? Because while probably most of us realize we have to promote at some level if we're going to get our products and services out there, it just feels awkward to self-promote. I don't know really anybody that likes or enjoys doing that, or at least will admit to it. But what I recommend and what we teach actually in the launch conference is that you don't promote yourself, but you promote your products and services. Even for example, when I'm giving a keynote speech is a product. So I don't have to talk about what a wonderful speaker I am. What I have to talk about is the speech that I have, like it's an objective, you know, third party something. But there's this speech I have that's designed to do X. And so I'm not talking about myself. I'm talking about this speech. So that little distinction, that little twist, I think can really help you, and I would encourage you to give it a try. The next question comes from Rick.
Hi, Michael. Rick Conklin in Wichita, Kansas. Do you ever recommend a separate blog for your professional work and a separate blog for your personal thoughts and comments? Thank you.
Rick, this is also a question I get a lot, and I would really suggest that you have one blog. It is tough to keep up with a single blog. Two is almost impossible. And in today's world, there seems to be no bright line of distinction between professional and personal life. Those things flow seamlessly in and out of one another. They certainly do in my life. You know, when you talk about your personal life, it humanizes your professional life, creates more trust, more texture, more context, makes you more believable. So I would bring those personal things right into your professional blog. Obviously, have some discretion and be thoughtful about it. Not everything that you think has to go on your blog. You might want to have a place where you do share those personal things that wouldn't be appropriate for your blog. I personally have my Facebook profile account that I use for that. And then I have a fan page that I use for everything else. But I just have my family and some close friends that are my friends on Facebook. And that's where I feel at liberty to share some of those things that really wouldn't be appropriate for my blog. It would be just a little bit too personal. But I would not recommend having two blogs. That will be tough. Well, that's all the time we have for questions this week. If you'd like to ask me a question, go to michaelhyatt.com/question, and you can either leave me a voicemail message or email me with your question. Again, go to michaelhyatt.com/question to leave a message. I'll be back after the break with a few announcements, actually one announcement, and my tip of the week.
Thinking of starting your own blog but worried that your technical know-how is not up to scratch?
The good news is that starting blogging has never been easier.
Michael shares his knowledge with you free and will show you that 20 minutes is all it takes to have your own blog up and running.
Hey Michael, this is Sherry Langland from SherryLangland.com. I wanted to let you know that I used your screencast to set up my WordPress blog and found it just as easy to set up as a Facebook account. So thank you very much.
Join Michael and follow his quick and easy step-by-step video tutorial at michaelhyatt.com/WordPress setup. At michaelhyatt.com/WordPress setup.
Take action now and start blogging today.
Well, I'm thrilled to announce that the Get Noticed theme for WordPress is finally available. In fact, we just started shipping yesterday, May the 13th, and it's been a long, long time coming. I announced the theme over a year ago. Since that time, we've been in beta mode. We've had almost 1,000 people test the software, and we've issued more than 30 updates. And by the way, I can't guarantee that we squished all the bugs, but it's about as rock solid as you can get. Well, I built this theme with my developer, Andrew Buckman, specifically for people like you who have a burning desire to get your message out but don't have the time to tinker with complicated technology. In other words, you want to focus on the content, not the technology. And the Get Noticed theme is the fastest way I know to get up and running fast so you can do what you do best. Tell your story, engage with your readers, and build a large and loyal following. And you can get all the details at getnoticedtheme.com. And if you're serious about wanting to build a platform, you need to check it out. You owe it to yourself to check it out. And now let me leave you with one final tip. Have you ever ended up with 20 plus tabs open in your browser? Man, I have. There are two major problems with this. First, it takes up a lot of RAM memory and can slow down your computer. Or if you don't have enough memory, then the computer writes it to disk and you get a lot of back and forth thrashing. It can heat up your computer, cause your fan to run more than it should. Second, it just creates unnecessary clutter. The reason I used to leave these tabs open is because I wanted to be able to come back to articles or product pages and read them when I had more time. And some people, and I've done this too, use Pocket or Instapaper, two great applications that clip the post or the web page and save it so you can read it later. But honestly, I don't need another single purpose application like this. I just use Evernote. All you have to do is install the Evernote Web Clipper. It's a really cool browser extension that works with almost any browser. I use it with Chrome. But when I find an article I want to read, I simply click the little Evernote button on my browser, and then I save everything to my Evernote cabinet. And this is a notebook that I use as sort of for everything, but I save it to my cabinet notebook. And here's kind of the insight. I also add a read later tag. And I might have other tags in there as well, depending on how I think I might use that information later. But I have the read later tag applied to that note. And then I have a saved search set up called read later. And so periodically, I go into Evernote and I catch up on my reading. When I'm done with the article, I remove the read later tag so it won't show up in the search. The nice thing about this is I don't have to add another app. I don't have to have all these tabs open. And the articles are available on all my devices because Evernote is on all my devices. Well, that's it for this episode of This Is Your Life. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please show the love by going to michaelhyatt.com/love and tweeting a link to the show. I'd be so grateful if you could do that. That'll also help us get the word out. And thanks also to the following people for rating my podcast this past week on iTunes. Andrew J. Mason, Douglas and Storm, Jason, Marissa Shadrick, Mercedes Phil, and Jay Ellig. I'd be so grateful if you consider rating my show like these did. This, again, helps keep the visibility of the show up, and you can do that at michaelhyatt.com/iTunes. But until next time, remember, your life is a gift. Now go make it count. This is your